Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, the United Nations Security Council strongly condemned North Korea's launch of a long-range rocket at an emergency meeting on Sunday. All 15 council members, including China, approved the statement. The members pledged to quickly adopt a new resolution with significant new sanctions against North Korea. After the meeting, U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power said the resolution must include unprecedented measures. China's Ambassador Liu Jiyi, however, said the new resolution should reduce tension, work towards denuclearization, maintain peace, and encourage a negotiated solution. China is a permanent member of the UN Security Council. It can stop council resolutions from being approved. China must support any sanctions if they are to be effective, because China gives large amounts of economic aid to North Korea. Since 2006, the Council has approved increasingly stronger economic restrictions on North Korea for its nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles tests. North Korea said the rocket was carrying a satellite. It was launched early Sunday morning near the northwestern border with China. The North said the launch is part of its peaceful space program to send satellites into orbit. But many experts said the space program is being used to hide its tests of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles systems. The U.S. Congress is also considering measures to target companies and banks that trade with North Korea. Many of them are in China. Meanwhile, South Korea and the U.S. announced a plan to begin talks on deploying a missile defense system. A joint statement by the militaries of the two countries said they will meet to talk about the possibility of sending the system to South Korea and begin operating it at the earliest possible date. Yoo Jae-seung is South Korea's deputy defense minister. He said the system would strengthen the missile defense of the Korea-U.S. alliance. Yoo said the alliance is considering deploying the system because of the North Korean rocket launch. He said the North has refused to talk about removing nuclear weapons from the peninsula. He spoke during a meeting with Lieutenant General Thomas Vandal, the commander of the U.S. 8th Army in South Korea. The missile defense system is known as THAAD. The system is carried on trucks and can fire rockets that can destroy ballistic missiles inside or outside the atmosphere. 3 years ago, when South Korea talked about deploying it, China said it threatened its security. On Sunday, China again criticized the plan to discuss a possible deployment of the THAAD missile defense system. Next, Dorothy Gundy reports on a recent promise of aid to Syrian refugees and peace talks to end civil war in Syria.
Hours after talks to bring peace to Syria were stopped, the United States has promised almost $1 billion in aid for Syrian refugees. International donors met in London to talk about Syria's political and humanitarian crisis. Fighting between the Syrian government, its opponents, and Islamic militants continues. Refugees are fleeing the country by the thousands, most recently escaping fighting in the city of Aleppo. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said the meeting was critical to helping solve the human crisis. He called on the Syrian government and its ally Russia to halt attacks so that aid could reach those who need it. The donors' conference opened Thursday in London. The goal was $9 billion, but more than $10 billion was raised, said British Prime Minister David Cameron. Last year, donor nations agreed to raise $4.5 billion. The new amount is for support of people in Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey. The neighbor countries are strained by a huge flow of people escaping the fighting. Cameron said life-saving aid is needed to support international efforts to help people. If ever there was a moment to take a new approach to the humanitarian crisis in Syria, surely it is now, he said. Last year, 1 million people, largely from Syria, moved into Western Europe. Estimates say that will grow to 4 million this year. Some European countries have said they will take fewer asylum seekers than before. The peace talks in Geneva were suspended Wednesday after opposition members said the Syrian government continued to battle Syrian rebels around Aleppo. A rights group, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, said 40,000 people fled the area this week alone. UN Special Envoy Stéphane de Mistura said Wednesday that indirect talks could be suspended until as late as February 25th. It is not the end, and it is not the failure of the talks, de Mistura told reporters. He said the Syrian government and the opposition remain interested in having the political process started. The opposition has demanded that Syrian and Russian governments end the airstrikes on civilians. It also wants barriers lifted on aid to areas held by rebels. And the group has demanded that Syria release thousands of detainees. The head of the opposition delegation said the group would not return to the talks until we see positive steps on these issues. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Recently, representatives of 12 countries signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership in New Zealand. U.S. President Barack Obama says the trade deal will reduce taxes and support a free and open internet over time. Mario Ritter has the story.
Representatives of 12 countries have signed a major free trade agreement for East Asia and the Pacific. The Trans-Pacific Partnership was officially signed at a ceremony Thursday in Auckland, New Zealand. News media released pictures of some ministers rubbing noses. For native New Zealanders, rubbing noses is a sign of goodwill. The nations that make up the TPP are responsible for 40% of the world's economy. They include Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, and Malaysia. The other nations are Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, and the United States. In a statement, U.S. President Barack Obama called the agreement a forward-looking trade deal that sets new, high ideals for trade and investment. he said, the pact suspends thousands of taxes and supports a free and open internet. Obama said it also prevents unfair laws that restrict the free flow of information. And he added that it includes strong words in support of fair labor policies and environmental protection. But the signing ceremony was, in some ways, only the beginning of a new process. The 12 nations have 2 years to ratify or reject the agreement. The United States Congress passed Trade Promotion Authority for the President in June 2015. It requires Congress to either approve or reject trade agreements without adding to or amending them. However, Congress has yet to consider the huge free trade agreement. It also will take some time to study the thousands of pages in the agreement. Michael Froman is the U.S. trade representative. He says his office will work to persuade members of Congress that the deal should be passed. He says the estimated increase to exports for the U.S. will be $350 billion a year. The TPP is designed to cut tariffs or import taxes that free trade supporters say are barriers to trade. Without these barriers, supporters say, more goods and services will flow across borders, increasing trade and economic activity. Gary Huffbauer is with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He told VOA that while tariffs will eventually be dropped, that will not happen immediately.
The barriers, the tariffs in the case of goods, do not go to zero immediately. It takes some years, maybe on average about 10 years, depending on the product.
Labor groups in the United States, however, oppose the TPP. They are concerned that low-cost imports will flood the U.S. market. This would drive prices down and limit the wages that American employers pay their workers. Labor leaders have voiced opposition. They say trade agreements should protect wages and improve labor conditions for workers. It remains to be seen when the TPP agreement will be voted on in the Senate. Gary Huffbauer says if the deal is not brought to a vote by July, the agreement might be voted on after a new U.S. president takes office next year. I'm Mario Ritter.
The 2015 Super Bowl was the most watched ever. This year should be no different. But why do people watch the Super Bowl? Here are Dan Friedel and Marcia James to answer that question.
The number of people who watched the football game on television was larger than 100 million every year since 2010.
In the United States, watching the game with friends has become like a holiday. People gather at the home of someone with a big screen television. Lots of food is prepared. Lots of beverages are served. People often wear shirts and hats that make them look like they are players on their favorite team.
People who watch the game are not only interested in what happens on the field. The commercials and the halftime show are big draws. This year, the halftime performers are the British band Coldplay and singer Beyoncé.
One poll conducted in 2013 found that only 28% of the respondents said they watched to enjoy the game. more people, 39%, of 500 people surveyed said they watched to see the commercials. The Super Bowl is a major spectacle in the U.S. It is played in a huge sports arena where almost 70,000 fans cheer and make noise. They watched the players on the field move a ball down a grassy field and smash into each other to stop the advance. Media and advertising companies measure how viewers react to the advertising during the game. Alan Siegel is a writer for USA Today. He said he thinks fans turned their attention to the ads, or commercials, 20 years ago. Some of the games in the 1990s were not very competitive, and the winner seemed to be decided early in the game. As a result, people started paying more attention to the commercials.
USA Today measures the most popular commercials every year. Viewers can go to USA Today's website and vote for their favorites. This year is the 50th Super Bowl game. Siegel put together a tournament among the 32 most popular ads in Super Bowl history to honor the occasion. His goal? To find out the best Super Bowl commercial ever. Of the 32 finalists, one of USA Today's favorites featured football player Mean Joe Green in 1979. He got the nickname Mean Joe because he was a strong player who could tackle players on the opposing teams. But in the commercial, Green shows his soft side when he trades his football shirt or jersey for a bottle of Coca-Cola.
The Mean Joe Green Coke ad is widely considered the first real blockbuster kind of famous Super Bowl ad. It really kind of captured the hearts of a lot of people, and that sort of was the birth of Super Bowl advertising as we know it.
Apple Computer created an ad for the Macintosh in 1984 about oppression and mind control. Ridley Scott, who directed the movies Alien and Blade Runner, made the commercial.
The crazy thing about that ad is that it only aired nationally once, and people still remember it.
Those commercials, along with 29 others, competed in a vote, and four semifinalists emerged. Three Budweiser commercials and the Coca-Cola commercial with Green made it into the final four. The two finalists were Budweiser commercials that featured the brand's famous Clydesdale horses. One also featured a puppy. The champion turned out to be the ad featuring the horses and the puppy, called Puppy Love. Siegel explains why it won.
A startling amount of memorable ads are Budweiser ads, and they've sort of mastered the art of really getting people to pay attention to what they're doing. One thing to note about those two ads is that they both have animals, especially puppies, and so people love cute animals. I think that's that never fails.
Some of this year's Super Bowl commercials have been released on YouTube.
Another more serious advertisement features British actress Helen Mirren. It turns out to be another Budweiser ad, but it is not funny. Mirren is sitting at a restaurant, about to eat a cheeseburger with French fries. She has a bottle of Budweiser, too. She looks at the camera and warns people against drunken driving. She calls drunken drivers selfish cowards. I do think people will remember it in a few years, Siegel says. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Marcia James.
Antoine Randall L. played professional American football in the National Football League for 9 seasons. He won the Super Bowl as a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers team in 2006. But now, he can barely walk down the steps in his home. Dan Friedel and Anna Mateo have more.
Imagine reaching the top of your profession as a 27-year-old. Teammates cry tears of joy. Confetti falls from above. A trophy is held high like a new baby. And your hometown holds a parade through the streets to honor you and your team. Then 10 years later, you can barely walk down the steps of your home. Your wife has to remind you of recent conversations.
That's the life of Antoine Randall L. He retired 4 years ago after a 9-year career in the National Football League as a wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Washington Redskins. Randall L. was known for being a great athlete. At the University of Indiana, he was a quarterback. Then he transitioned to wide receiver in the NFL. He threw an important touchdown pass in Pittsburgh's 2006 Super Bowl victory.
Randall L. was 32 when he retired. Now, in a recent story published by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Randall L. says he wishes he had never played football. As a former football player showing the effects of physical and head trauma that came from head collisions during the game, Randall L. is not alone. But he is one of few ex-players who say they would not play football if they had a chance to start their lives over again. Randall L.'s story seems like one of the characters in Concussion, a movie starring actor Will Smith. A concussion is an injury that happens when the brain slams against the inside of the skull. It can happen when two football players collide, or when a soccer player uses his or her head to propel a soccer ball. It can happen to anyone who hits their head on a hard surface or object. The film follows Dr. Bennett Omalu as he researches the brain disease that came to be called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Omalu, from Nigeria, worked as a medical examiner in Pittsburgh. His job was to examine bodies to determine the cause of death. That is what we call an autopsy in English.
Omalu became interested in brain trauma and disease while studying in the United States. He discovered CTE while performing an autopsy on Mike Webster. Webster also played with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 1970s and 1980s. Omalu says he did not know Webster was a famous football player when he examined him.
I did not know what football was. Mm-hmm. I did not know what the NFL was. In fact, I did not even know what a quarterback was. I wondered why it was called football, because they did not kick. They used their hand. It should have been called handball.
In one scene in the film, Omalu shows what happens to the brain during a collision. He shakes a raw egg inside a glass jar. That is how most people make scrambled eggs. It is also a good demonstration of how a healthy brain gets damaged. Even with helmets on, football players suffer multiple scrambling collisions per game. Over the course of a career, these hits and scrambles add up. Webster died of a heart attack in 2002. He suffered from depression and dementia before his death.
While most of the story detailed in Concussion has been told before, the film's wide distribution and star power offers insight into the dangers of a football career. Webster's story was told in a GQ article in 2009, and Omalu was a key figure in the PBS documentary League of Denial in 2013. In a story about the film in Sports Illustrated, Emily Kaplan writes, "Will Smith's familiar charm helps make a complicated and uncomfortable topic accessible, with head trauma being explained on the order of a ninth grade biology book." The film tries to make football fans pay attention to science Omalu says he is not a football fan. Omalu's story shows that an outsider can make a difference in a new society.
Researchers and doctors have had experience with football players and other athletes in contact sports who had lingering brain problems. But Omalu was able to look at Webster's brain trauma with fresh eyes. Omalu gave an interview to Frontline, a respected investigative news program. Omalu said the brains looked similar to those of boxers like Muhammad Ali, who suffered repeated blows to the head. They were also similar to those of people who suffered from Alzheimer's disease, except for one factor. They were still young and healthy. The contradiction helped Omalu realize he had discovered something new. He had no loyalty to the NFL when he wrote a paper explaining his discovery in the journal Neurosurgery. But the film shows how the league argued that Omalu had made up his research. Omalu says some people told him he was attacking the American way of life.
Omalu eventually became known as the doctor who could definitively diagnose CTE in football players. And the cases kept coming. He saw samples from the brains of Terry Long, Andre Waters, and Justin Strelzik, all former players who died young, and they all had CTE. The study turned out not to be wrong. Webster was not unique. And eventually, the NFL, college football, and high school football teams had to rethink the way they handled concussions. As the concussion story gained notice, the NFL started to take head injuries more seriously. For example, a doctor who is not paid by the team or league must be on each sideline. The doctor is responsible for stopping the game if a player shows signs of a head injury. There are helmets with devices that can measure the force of a collision. Even with the changes, football is still risky. News came out in late January that Tyler Sash had an advanced case of CTE. Sash was a member of the New York Giants team that won the Super Bowl in 2012. He died of a drug overdose in September 2015 at the age of 27.
Many athletes are willing to sacrifice their bodies and their futures for a chance to play in the NFL or the Super Bowl. In 2014, ESPN surveyed more than 300 active NFL players and found out that 85% would play in the Super Bowl with a concussion. But after the work of Omalu, the perception is changing. There are more stories coming from athletes like Randall L.
In 2015, after a strong first season, Chris Borland retired from the NFL at the age of 24. He had to return about $400,000 to his team, the San Francisco 49ers, when he quit. When he announced his retirement, Borland told ESPN, "If there were no possibility of brain damage, I'd still be playing."
Omalu's work and the work of doctors like him resulted in a small compromise by the NFL. In 2015, a lawsuit was settled after years of negotiations. Almost $1 billion will be made available for more than 4,500 former players who are suffering from brain injuries related to playing football. Individual players could receive up to $5 million.
I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.